Hi, I'm Becky Sims, and welcome to Behind the Future, the podcast from Aspiration Digital. We're here to unlock digital careers, one conversation at a time. On each episode, I'll be joined by a student co-host. We'll be interviewing amazing people from across the industry to learn about how they got started in their career and what it is that they do. Let's dive in to find out the secrets to their success. Wow, what a fascinating episode with Darren. Yeah. Wasn't he great?
Yeah, he was so good.
He was just so interesting. You can tell he loves storytelling.
Yeah.
Like, that really shone through. What was your biggest takeaway?
I just gained insight on the creative industry and that you should always do what your heart tells you to do and not what other people are telling you to do. And also that mistakes are normal and it's not the end of the world if you make a mistake.
Love yeah. that. And it's so true, really is. So yeah, I'm excited for our listeners to
Me
get
too.
To tune in and see what they think. So over to our conversation with Darren.
Hi, I'm Darren Martin, and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Future. I'm joined today by Ashley, who is our student guest host. Ashley, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm 17. I study business economics and media, and I would like a career in the business and marketing industry when I'm older, and hopefully this podcast will help me develop that. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, we're hoping it is going to as well. And we're joined today by Darren. Darren, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Darren. I am the head of creative at the Evergreen Agency. We are a growth marketing agency that does paid media and creative for home, garden and lifestyle brands.
Amazing. I feel like there's some words in there we might need to unpack for the students, make sure everyone knows what we're talking
yes.
about. So I'm going to hand over to you for your first question.
So Darren, tell me about a bit about your career.
So at the moment, as I said, I'm head of creative. And what that means is that I sort of manage the whole creative team at our agency, the Evergreen Agency. We're not a huge team, but there is a lot going on at all times. So there's lots of things for me to do, which includes sort of managing the team, working on the ads that we do for our clients, which, as I mentioned before, are only home, garden and lifestyle brands. And also just trying to grow the agency by sort of doing outreach, going out and meeting prospective clients, lots and lots and lots of things, all lots of techie things, using video editors and cameras, and then lots of social things, so talking to people a lot, which I really enjoy.
Amazing. A very varied role. I think
yeah.
if you said to someone, oh, I'm a creative director, you might think that you're just in kind of working yeah. with artwork all the time,
yes.
but actually very varied and lots of different skill sets on show there.
Yeah.
Definitely. And do you, what kind of creative? So is it mainly video?
Yeah. So my specialty is in video. I would always say, actually, and this is a top tip for anybody looking to get into the industry, is don't assume that a videographer is also a photographer, because the skill sets are entirely different. If you asked me to do some graphic design, you're going to be very disappointed. It's why we have someone who focuses, it's Harriet, who is our creative director. She focuses on the graphic side of things for our ads, while I focus on the video side of things.
Amazing. And where might these ads be? Where might we see them online?
So we do paid media, which is paid search and paid social. And then to break that down even further, paid search would be like Google Ads or Microsoft Ads. And paid social would be Meta, which is obviously Facebook, Instagram. And then you could even include TikTok, Pinterest, all that sort of stuff. And the main difference there, again, just to sort of give a bit of insight on those, is paid search, you are actively looking for something, whereas paid social, we call it interruption marketing. And so it's where people are scrolling through their Facebook and then they see a sponsored post. And that is that's paid social ads. So if you, say, for example, go on the website of one of our clients and you're thinking about buying something, but then you don't end up buying something, and then you go onto your Facebook and you're scrolling through, you might see a sponsored post, which is retargeting you back towards that. And that's where you might see our ads.
Amazing. We probably get a lot of those. Yeah. Maybe not the home and garden ones, but I know shoes often follow me around. That's I always think actually it's quite interesting if you get to see someone else's social feed because you're like, oh, I've got a window into what you follow, but also what you've been trying to buy recently.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Amazing. Amazing.
What would you say is your favorite thing about your career?
That's a good question. So first and foremost, the people. Mm-hmm. Where I am at the moment, and I say at the moment, what I mean is where I'm going to be, because I love it so much, I'm never going to leave.
I love that.
I joke that I never go home.
That's now on camera as well. Yeah. this is locked in.
So the people who I get to work with are some of my favorite people in the world. The time that I've been at Evergreen, I've built so many relationships. That's some of these people are my very best friends now, as well as just not as well as colleagues. So that's absolutely one of them. I think I've always liked variety, and so the fact that I get to work with so many different brands is a really amazing thing. You would think that because we only work with home, garden, and lifestyle brands, then that's not that much. I mean, it's quite a niche in terms of what you can choose from. There are plenty of agencies out there who work with everyone. But we always say, if you're talking to everyone, you're talking to no one. Mm. And it's why when we decided to niche down, we really cut off a lot of potential prospects out there. But then what we really quickly found is that there are still thousands and thousands of brands that are in the home, garden, and lifestyle space. And it means that rather than cutting out a lot of potential, we're actually now just honing in on what we want to focus on. And for those brands, it means they now have an agency who they know is focused on them, and they know that we specialize on them. And that to them is really reassuring. So I love working with those brands because, one, I like home, garden, and lifestyle products. It's usually something quite tangible. It's something you can hold, which is nice, because to be completely honest, I find that much more interesting than working with, say, like a solicitor's.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same.
Yeah.
And then also going back to what I was saying about the don't assume a videographer is a photographer. I feel like you can't assume that someone who knows how to market a garden brand knows how to market a solicitor's.
Yeah.
Because they're entirely different principles. So, in fact, I made a video recently with Aaron, our MD, one of our tea talks, as we call them, tea for the Evergreen Agency, where I did a sort of reference to restaurants. And I asked Aaron the question, what does KFC sell? And the answer is chicken. They don't sell every kind of food.
No.
And you'll find that with all restaurants. You don't have a restaurant that sells everything. They focus. And that's the case with a lot of other principals as well. But for a lot of agencies, they do everything.
Yeah.
So it makes much more sense to focus down on something. And then you can really sort of target that audience, be the experts in that field. Mm. And then you get to enjoy what I'm working on, because it's something that I really like.
Yeah. Do you have to like what it is though? Like, have you had experiences where it's not a product that you would buy that you're the kind of target customer for? How does that?
Yeah. I think when you're in that situation, you almost have to give yourself the challenge of, well, if I don't like this, if I'm not interested in this, then how do I get people like me to become interested in it? It almost becomes an extra challenge of, how do I do my best work here, regardless of my opinions? And that is the case with some of the brands that we work with. I mean, I'm not going to say that I would buy everything that we market, but I think it helps when it's tangible.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot easier to market something that you can hold.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I think if you can't market something that you can hold, then you have to focus on the feeling of it.
Yeah. It's interesting though, isn't it? Because I think I've worked with a number of different people over the years, and there's one lady that sticks in my head. She was a client of ours, and she worked at a football club. So she worked for Tottenham Football Club. They were our client. But she was an Arsenal fan. And she was like, I could never work for Arsenal. She loves Arsenal, but she was like, I love it too much.
Yes.
And I would put too much of my feelings and maybe not be able to represent the fans. Whereas at Tottenham, I can be a football fan and I can think about what fans need to see. And I was like, that's really interesting insight. So actually, sometimes you don't want to work with something you love too much.
Yeah,
it's kind of finding that balance.
It's probably the reason why we don't market video games.
Yeah.
Because it'd be all over them.
You'd be like, I can't get any work done.
No, I'd just be playing it all the time.
Oh, I love that. No, it's interesting though, because I think sometimes people think they have to follow exactly what they love. But actually, sometimes passion can come out of that understanding and actually putting yourself in the customer's shoes, trying to kind of break down that challenge.
And I think that's really important. There's a term that I use. Basically, if I'm working on a video and then I get feedback, which I disagree with, but ultimately I have to accept it, I say to myself, director's cut. And what I mean by that is I will take the first version that I love and I'm very personally attached to, and I will just hold that onto the side and say, that's the director's cut. I've got that. And now I'll do whatever you want. So then you can essentially just cut out your personal attachment, put it to one side, and then do what you need to do from a purely objective point of view.
Yeah. It is the challenge working with clients sometimes, is that you are.
Yeah.
But I suppose also the role there is how do you get it right? Because sometimes what they want, they're also not their target audience. So trying to get them to see that actually you might think, oh, I prefer this, but actually that's not what your audience wants to see. It's a bit like today, actually, why, for example, Ashley is on this podcast. If you and I just have a chat about what we're talking about with the view of helping to inspire students, we don't know really what students want to know, which is why it makes sense that we've got someone here that really can ask the questions that they want to know.
Saying
as well.
I'm not hip, I'm not down with the kids.
well, yes, you are, but I definitely, we're both not 17 anymore. So tell it, let's back to more
speaking
questions
on that. What would you say like influenced you or inspired you to get into this industry?
Okay, so this is actually going to be, I've got a lot of slides on this on my presentation that I'm doing. But I guess to give you a sort of, not to go on, because we could go on for hours and hours, but as a kid, I always loved stories. And yet, funnily enough, I wasn't crazy on books. For me, it's always been, as I mentioned, video games. But a big part of that was the stories. I used to write stories constantly as a kid. And I really didn't know what to do with that for a long time. But then it was video that really opened my eyes to that. And actually, my way into it was YouTube. When I was at university, as you've both now seen...
We have such a sneak peek.
My very first YouTube video, which I showed them just before we started recording, which is all online. I won't say the name of the channel, but if you do your digging, you might be able to find it. But I was in my first year at uni. I was watching a lot of just vloggers on YouTube. And I thought to myself, you know, I could do that. So I took my university grant, which of course is for food, and spent it all on a camera and lived on about 11p noodles for a couple of months. And so I did that and started videos, and that's where I realized, oh, my love of storytelling can perfectly be told through video. And yeah, the rest is history.
I love that. How do you get started in YouTube though?
You turn the camera on, and then as you saw, you make an absolute fool of yourself. I just turned the camera on and I spoke. My first video was essentially just explaining what I wanted for my channel. And then I just, whatever idea came to mind, I just did it. Some of them were silly sketches. Some of them were me telling stories. Some of them were, well, I mean, one in particular that comes to mind was talking about hangover cures and where I'd actually gone out and purposefully got quite drunk so that I could test these hangover cures. Got about halfway through making that video and just could not bear doing anymore. So it's a little, there's a little bit of fakery going on in that video.
Wow.
But yeah, so a whole host of different things. One night I was up quite late and then I decided to stay up all night so that I could film the sunrise.
Nice.
So it really became any excuse to film because I became so in love with it. And I even inspired a couple of my the other students in my class to start doing it as well, because they, I think they wanted a piece of the action.
And did you know it was going to lead to a job at that point? No. And that, or was this just purely for fun?
I thought it might lead to me being a famous YouTuber. That was a hope, for sure. Never happened, obviously. But I never thought it could lead to a job. At the time, I was actually studying music. And that really came about because I was in a band with a couple of friends. We thought we were going to be famous. It seems to be a running trend in my life.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, it does, doesn't it?
And then one of my friends left the band to do something else. And I kind of felt like I was on this track and I didn't know how to get off. I didn't know how to stop moving forward. And what that meant was that when I finished college, the reasonable logical step was university. So that's what I did. And I think deep down, I didn't really know why I was doing it. I was just so afraid to stop still that I couldn't stop moving forward, even if it was in the wrong direction.
Amazing. And do you think, like, today as a YouTuber, can you start with just an iPhone?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, phones today are way better than the cameras I had when I started. And the fact that you've got selfie mode, so you can sort of just turn it around and see yourself. My first camera, I couldn't flip the screen around or anything. I had to have an HDMI cable and plug it into my TV to be able to see myself, which was not ideal because the cable was so short that it nearly pulled my TV over. It was a real hodgepodge.
Health and safety, yeah, it sounds, really was. Yeah.
So I think it's much more accessible these days.
Yeah.
I think the fact that you can do, you can even with things like TikTok, you can do a lot of the editing on your phone. I was using full-on editing software at the time, which I had to just teach myself because I couldn't think of any other way of doing it. Now, what that did lead to was it gave me the skills to do the things that I need today in what I do. So there are pros and cons. But I think if you just want to get started and you don't know where to start, it's much more easy to get into it these days.
Yeah. Do you do any YouTube videos or TikTok?
I have done in the past. They're really fun to make.
Yeah. I would say.
Especially if you're like a really creative person.
Yeah.
I feel like you could like implement your creativity into those videos. So
definitely.
Well, you're an artist, aren't you?
I did GCSE art, but yeah.
Because you could do some speed draws, like time lapses of drawing.
Ooh,
like
that would be fun.
Super,
that is a good idea.
Super successful for TikTok.
Yeah.
You've got some ideas to go away from. There you go.
Would
you say that uni helped you kickstart the journey into your career right now?
In ways. I wanted to say no, but in ways it did. But not in the way that I ever thought it would. I think going to uni was a really great experience because it got me away from home. And I didn't move that far away. Originally, I'm from Chester and I went to Huddersfield University. So it wasn't that far, maybe an hour and a half on the train. But it allowed me to have some form of independence. And particularly in the first year of uni, you're never really given that much work to do that you don't get to experience living on your own for the first time, because I think they understand that a lot of these people who come to university are young, they've never lived on their own, and they have no idea how to do their own shopping, pay their own bills, do their own washing for a lot of these people. And so I think it was really good in a way to show me how to be more independent. But what I learned at uni from a purely sort of skill base, actually university didn't help me that much in terms of what I wanted to do, what I do now. by my second year, I'd sort of gotten the idea that I wanted to go more into video. And because of I was doing music, I had some opportunity to do that. I focused more into music for film. Mm-hmm. So I was able to sort of blur those lines a little bit. It was still mostly music, but what that allowed me to do was almost use it as an excuse to make my own films so that I could make music for film. But I think deep down, it was just a reason for me to be able to make a film.
I love that. But that's interesting that on that journey, you start kind of discovering.
You do.
Because I think it's hard to just sit and still being like, what do I want to do? It's really difficult. But as you start experiencing bits and seeing and getting to get involved in different things, you start to know what you want.
It's really difficult because, so, I mean, and that wasn't even my first change. I left school really wanting to be an actor. I did an audition for college, got in, and then like a week before changed my mind because I was too worried that I wasn't going to be a famous actor. So I did art because my friend was doing art and I just really didn't know what to do. And then about halfway through that course, I sort of didn't really like it that much, but I was afraid that I would have wasted that time. So I finished the course because I thought, well, at least I'll have a diploma at the end of it. And I think there was a big aspect of my early life, which was not being so afraid of wasting time that I never allowed myself to stop doing something that I truly didn't want to do because I was worried that the time I'd already spent on it would be wasted. And it's why actually giving up being a musician was one of the hardest things that I ever did. I still remember the day that I internally made that decision that I was, I think at the time I was very dramatically said, I'm never going to make music again.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, that might not be the case. And I might one day come back to it, but it really felt like closing a chapter.
Yeah.
But what that allowed me to do was finally put all of my energy into something else, in this case, video, which allowed me to then basically stop everything I was doing, not be worried that I'd wasted time and just go, you know, if this is really what I want to do, it's never too late.
Yeah.
And I can do it now. Even if I'm in my mid-20s, I can change that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see career changes happen.
You do.
The whole way through people's careers.
A lot of famous people are only ever, they were only ever famous when they were in their 30s or 40s or 50s.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's never say never. And I think, yeah, being able to be reflective and actually, I know what you mean, that kind of that sunk cost of you've spent this time it on it, like do you feel kind of tied to it. But actually, sometimes it is better to go and just know I'm moving on. Mm-hmm. It, like I have learned stuff from that and it's not wasted, but I'm ready to do something different.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are Duolingo, Nike and McDonald's some of your favorite brands? For all the latest marketing and brand news, follow The Drum Mag on Instagram.
What would you say is your like biggest challenge throughout your career?
I think one that comes to mind, I think everybody at some point in their career experiences imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know what that means, it's basically you feel like you're not good enough to do the job that you have. And one thing that I found really powerful as I became an adult and as I sort of left school and university and started full-time employment was the realization that at the end of the day, nobody really knows what they're doing.
It's so true.
Everybody goes day to day and they kind of know what they've got to do for the day. But for the grand scheme of things, we're all still those kids that felt like adults had all the answers. But now we're the adults and we realize that they were just like us the whole time. And I think there's a real freedom in that.
Yeah.
Because if you feel like you're not good enough to do what you're doing, just know that everybody around you probably feels quite similar.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all winging it.
Yeah.
We're
absolutely
all...
I don't know what I'm going to say next.
No, we don't know what we're going to ask you next. We're just going to have a bit of fun and keep asking questions. But yeah, it's life is winging it, isn't it?
Yes.
And I think when you can let go of that a bit more. And,
yes.
And obviously there's some careers where they can't wing it as much. Like I'm hoping our surgeons and our lawyers
yes.
and
yeah. Yeah, don't wing it.
They're not winging it so much. But in our world. Like, part of the creativity comes from testing things out and trying things out and seeing what works, and whether that's in a final deliverable or whether that's in a how you approach a situation of like putting an idea forward to a client and trying it in a different way and seeing, do they get it? Did that work? Or I might do more of that. I might do less of that. And some of those intentional things you can reflect on.
Yeah. And I think one thing, again, that it's, so I'm quite techie. I'm quite good at computers, and I've always been like the go-to computer guy in almost every place I've worked, and for my family as well. And one of the reasons why I think I've gotten good at computers is because of a fact that I think you could almost tie to almost anything in life, which is no mistake for the most part. And this probably doesn't apply to the surgeons again.
Yes. But yep.
no mistake is entirely undoable.
Yeah.
And so with a computer, if you accidentally delete a file, for the most part, you can get it back if you take it out of the recycle bin. And again, so don't be afraid to click the buttons. Don't be afraid to test things out. Because if you do something wrong, for the most part, you can undo it. And you'll probably have learned something by doing it. So, and I know, for example, my mum, for example, is the biggest technophobe in the world. And she is that way because she's so afraid to try things.
Yeah.
She's so afraid of getting it wrong and then it being completely unrecoverable. But with computers and with most things in life, you can't break something entirely just by doing one mistake.
Yeah. It, like, even with relationships, it's not a very strong relationship if one thing.
Exactly.
Like, you think in the agency world, we're often delivering work for clients sometimes you might miss a deadline or you might produce something that didn't meet their expectations, but they don't give up on you. You then go, well, let's hear your feedback and let's go and work on it again. And
there's a reason why we have amends.
Yeah.
Everything has amends. I have time for amends on every project we do, and it's because you can't assume that your first attempt is going to be perfect. But you don't just then, the client doesn't just leave.
Yeah, they don't go, that's it.
That's it. That's not good enough. I'm out.
Yeah.
They give you feedback because nothing is as black and white as just you did it once and got it wrong and that's the end.
Yeah, we're all human. And I think the more you remember we're human, I think it helps you because it's not, you know, I do a lot of mentoring with speakers that get on stage and I always remind them, I say, you do realize that whole audience sitting there, no one's sitting there hoping, oh, I really hope they fall over.
Yeah.
I really hope they mess up what they're going to, like, nobody thinks like that.
I hope not.
Well, and if they do, they're not our kind of people, are they?
Nah.
But everyone's rooting for each other. Everyone wants each other to do well. Yeah. And
I think as well, if you remember that about yourself, but then also about other people, it means that, like, I'm a big believer that if someone makes a mistake, I couldn't care less about blame.
Yeah.
It's about what's the issue, how do we solve it, and how do we move on?
Yeah.
Because ultimately blame is just a time waster.
Yeah.
Because that the person who made the mistake is 100% gonna know it was their fault.
Yeah.
And they're gonna learn from it and they're gonna know that they don't ever want that to happen again.
Yeah.
Taking that additional time to just say you did a bad job.
Yeah, not helpful.
It's not going to help in any way.
No. I'm picking it to know where it went wrong to fix a process is sometimes useful, but that's not about pointing fingers, etc. So,
yeah, I feel like mistakes doesn't mean it's like the end of the world.
That's
like, I feel like you shouldn't always worry about what people are going to think about you and just live your life.
Yeah.
Expanding on that, what would you say is your biggest accomplishment in your career?
So
that first YouTube video.
Because
it got you started. No,
it did. It did. you know, I've thought about deleting that a couple of times.
No, but... It's part of the story.
It's part of the story.
And you said you love stories.
I do love stories. So I think I have had the opportunity a couple of times to start departments. And I genuinely love doing that because... One, I'm a bit of a control freak, but I love ownership. I love responsibility. I love ownership. So I love being able to take something and really put my stamp on it and grow it. So my biggest accomplishment in that vein is with the Evergreen Agency. So I came in at the beginning of last year. And it's when we made our niche down into a home garden lifestyle. And it's also where we made a couple of changes to the services that we offer. And one of those was creative. We were finding that a lot of the clients that we had, they wanted to do their own ads, but they either didn't have someone in-house who could do it, or they didn't have the budget to hire a creative agency. So ultimately, it just wasn't possible. And what that meant was that the ads that we were able to make were quite limited. So I actually said to Aaron, our MD, a couple of times, we need to sell video. I said it a couple of times. And the great thing about Aaron is he is my biggest enabler. Every time I say to him, we were actually joking about this the other day. Every time I say to him, I've got this idea, but we obviously can't do it. It's a bit out there. And he sort of laughed and said, but you know, when you say that, it normally means we're going to do it. And for the most part, so many of our ideas that we've come up with, I mean, he will say he comes up with an idea and I make it a good idea.
Nice.
What that really means is that my imagination goes crazy and it gets way out of bounds and outlandish, but he just loves it as much as I do. And we just go ahead with it. And because of that, and because of his trust in me and what I do, I've been able to grow the creative team at Evergreen from nothing to making our own content that we now do consistently. We do 3 videos a week, and we have done for over a year now. We never miss a date, and we never will. But also then growing the client side of things, so that we now do creative ads for pretty much all of our clients. We've also just introduced brand films, which is an amazing thing because we can now offer that to even not our clients, which is, and I love a brand film because a brand film, what's a brand film at the end of the day, if not a story?
Yes, yeah.
So I love that. But then also I've been able to become an integral part of the agency. It feels like a second home to me now. I love being a part of something. I love feeling like I'm needed.
Yeah.
I once had a job. I'm not going to say where, just because I don't want them to get back at me in any way. But it was a, let's say it was a homeware shop.
Okay.
And what my, I always quote this as my worst working day. Because I was in the shop, I was working on my own, and it got to the end of the day. I'd been working for 9 hours, and I thought to myself, it's been quite quiet today. I don't remember having a lot of people in. So I got the receipt out that tells you all like the day's transactions, and it said 0. And I thought, we haven't had a single customer in 9 hours. I've been on my own all day, and it was my birthday. So, and that to me, it made me feel like I could leave and nothing would change. What I was doing, what I was spending my entire day doing, was utterly pointless, was worthless to that company. I was not needed at all. But now at Evergreen, I know that if I don't show up, that day is going to be entirely different.
Yeah.
If I come in, I'm going to be able to contribute in a way where it's going to change things for the better. And that feeling is so much more than you will ever need to get up in the morning and go to work.
I love that. You said something back at the start there around the fact that you love responsibility and ownership. When in your career did you realize that? Did you always know, or was that something that dawned on you at a point that they were skill sets you had?
I think it's interesting. I think I've always been fairly confident in a social setting, although that's not always been the case. When I was a child, I was one of the most shy children you can imagine. But I think in sort of university probably was where it started. Where it started was college, because in college, I became competitive. And before that, I'd always coasted by. It was like, I don't need to make any waves. I just get by and do whatever. And it was in college where I was like, I'm quite good at this. Like, and if I am quite good, why? Like, why just be good? Why not be the best? And that really then made me try. And it's actually, it leads me on to it's one of the last things in my slides that I have, which is a quote that I came up with, which I tell people, is you don't have to be the best. You just have to try your best.
Nice.
And there have been times throughout college, university, anything, where I knew there were people around me who were better than me, more skilled. But I knew for a fact I was going to try way harder than anyone. Yeah. And ultimately that would put me on top.
Yeah.
And so I think it was, as I said, in university where people would start turning to me to, like, if we were in a group, I'd be the one who would give the answers and all of that sort of stuff. That's where I started to feel that almost sense of like pride of being the responsible one.
Yeah.
And it's almost, you get almost a bit of adrenaline.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm gonna sort of stand out in a way. And I actually remember there was a time in university where one of our lecturers said, you know, if you really want to impress me, you do this thing, but no one's going to do that. And in my head, immediately I was like, well, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
Would you say that building relationships is key to like growing in your career?
100%. I think we were talking a little bit before the podcast about how a cultural fit is most of the time way more important than a skill fit. You can teach someone a skill, but you can't really teach them personality. And I think at the moment I'm recruiting for a role. So I've had a lot of experience with making sure people can do the job, but also making sure they would fit in. And one thing that I always think to myself that Harriet, who is our creative director, I mentioned before, mentioned to me, is a good way to look at someone from a cultural fit is, would you give them a hug? and obviously that's not definitive.
No.
You don't have to be able to give someone a hug to give them a job.
No.
But it is a really good way to know if they are, like, because if I would give someone a hug, I would say they are definitely a cultural fit.
Yeah.
Obviously, if I wouldn't give them a hug, that wouldn't stop me from giving them a job.
No.
But it's a nice baseline.
Yeah.
And so I think, again, I was saying before the podcast that no matter what job it is you're trying to go into, if you can kind of do the job, but you are the most pleasant person to chat with,
you're
probably going to make yourself have a much greater chance of getting that position. Because I think a lot of people think with their heart over their head when it comes to making decisions. And they know deep down that if you can do the basis of a job, they can probably teach you all the specifics.
Yeah.
And if they know if they're going to get on with you every single day, because you are going to have to be with these people every single day, then that's going to be one of the biggest contributing factors to whether or not they want to work with you.
And I think that's so true in the world of agencies. I think there's probably some businesses that you go into where actually their culture wouldn't be like, we want to give you a hug.
I don't
know. I can imagine like a financial institute or something that wouldn't feel right.
Maybe there are really friendly financial institutes.
Will be some, I'm sure, but there'll probably be some that maybe.
I think that's quite mean of you to say.
I'm very mean. Sorry, finance. No, but there are different cultures, aren't there, and different types of places that people can work. And I think that's part of also working out where you want to go, is do you like the vibe that an industry has, and you're depicting our vibe really well, I think, as an industry, because I think your agency is very typical of the type of people.
We're a small agency, we don't ever plan on being a huge agency. We don't plan on being over 20-25 people, and I think with that you do get that close-knit sort of community. I think it's definitely harder to feel like you can hug 100 people, for example.
Big arms.
But I think when you work with a close-knit team, it really does help to really feel like you could spend time with each one of them individually and just get on like a house on fire.
Yeah, yeah. Are you excited for the future of the industry and where things are going?
Absolutely, yeah. I feel like, particularly with us, we are only just getting started. And I feel like with our industry, it's quite a tech filled industry, and technology is advancing at such a rapid rate. I'm sure I'm going to say the words AI a million times on this podcast as we keep going, but that's just one of the things that is super exciting. And so not only the technology side of things that is making me excited, but just the fact that we are so early in our journey. We only really niched down just over a year ago. So even though the agency's been going over 10 years, we do have that legacy, but we're kind of just getting started with this new adventure.
It's like a reset.
It's kind of Evergreen 2.0.
Yeah, which is exciting. And it's exciting to know that you can be a part of that. When you join a company, it doesn't often stand still. Like, it's always advancing, and there's different opportunities. And as you were saying, as you get the opportunity to, you can be a part of directing that future and being setting the scene, which is really exciting.
I love it. Some people might think AI is a bit controversial, but do you think it's beneficial to this industry?
I think of AI like I think of any technological tool. I used to constantly relate it to spell checker. Like, do you think someone's cheating if they use spell checker?
No.
No, it's a tool. Do you think that if someone is terrible at spelling, so every other word on an article they write is... they've corrected their spelling with spell checker. Is that not their work?
It is their work.
It is their work. So it's a tool that enhances your work and makes up for your shortcomings. Why wouldn't you use that? I don't think anyone would purposefully turn off spell checker.
No.
So in the same way, I think that AI is a tool to be used to enhance what we do. I constantly say that AI is not going to replace marketers. Marketers who use AI will replace those who don't. And I use AI every single day for a number of different reasons. And I think there are certain AIs out there, like ChatGPT, that people will assume that when you say AI, you mean ChatGPT. And I think it's really important to clarify that there is not one AI to do everything. There are many AIs to do many things. So I will use ChatGPT if I want sort of general sort of questions answered, or it's quite good at analysis-based things.
Yeah.
But if I want a bit of writing done, I use Claude, which is it's far better at writing than ChatGPT is. I like to think of ChatGPT as like the sciencey guy and Claude as like the arty guy.
Nice.
Or girl.
I can see you're turning it into stories.
Yeah. It helps to think of them as people, because when they take over the world, you have to be nice to them.
Yeah. Do you always ask, do you say please and thank you?
Well, no, actually sometimes I'm quite mean.
Oh, are you?
I'll be like, do it better. More.
I always then put please though. I'm like, could you try again? I'd like it more succinct, please.
Sometimes I just get impatient. But I really ought to say please and thank you. I'm very sorry, ChatGPT. Give me a good job. But then similarly with video, there's lots of AI tools out there. For example, we do, as I said before, we do 3 shows a week. And before we had our junior come in, Archie, shout out to Archie, before he came in to take over that side of things, to allow me to focus more on the client side of things, I was doing everything. And there was no way that I could do all of that video editing without some help. So we used tools with video editing that would essentially just do a rough cut of the video. It would chop everything up. It would basically match an audio to a camera. And then whenever that audio level would start, it would show that camera. And what that does is it takes an hour's worth of footage. You click a couple of buttons, and within like 30 seconds, you've got your rough cut. And then you can jazz it up, and you can make any changes that you like. But it just saves so much time.
Yeah.
And again, going back to the, is that my work? Well, I would have done it the exact same way anyway.
Yeah.
It just would have taken me a lot longer.
Yeah.
And arguably, it might not have even been as accurate as the AI could do it. So I see it as an assistant.
Yeah.
It is an assistant. Yeah. It really is. Now I have a real person doing it instead.
Yeah. I love
still
it.
An assistant in a way.
Well, and we're just at the start, really, aren't we? You think, although there are hundreds of tools already, 5 years' time, 10 years' time, there's going to be so much more.
Yes.
Do you have any predictions on that? Is there stuff that you're doing today that you think in, say, 20 years' time, you'll look back and think, wow, I can't believe that used to be manual. Or, I can't believe we used to do that because technology now helps us.
I think it's a really interesting question. And it's I think it's quite difficult to answer succinctly because there's almost an element with what I do of not wanting it to do everything.
Yeah.
So, for example, even though we'll have AI do a lot of the rough cuts, I would never let AI do a trailer because that's got so much of my creativity in it. One, I just love doing it. But two, it could replicate something similar, but I feel like you're always going to need that human touch. So I could say that in 10, 20 years' time, I could basically just sit in a chair all day and do nothing while AI does my entire job for me. But I kind of don't want it to.
Yeah.
I think AI works best when it assists, not takes over. And I know so many people are afraid of it taking over. I just don't think that's going to happen.
No. There's something about just human gut feel, human emotion. A computer can't replicate it.
And the thing is as well, sometimes ChatGPT can be so boldly wrong.
Yes.
And if you're not careful, you will believe everything it says, even though it's utterly made up most of it.
Yeah.
And it's why you've got to be really careful with these things.
Well, it's got its biases, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, for example, if you ask it to create some imagery for a business owner, you'll often get a man. Like,
yes,
because
true,
that's
true.
It's what it's seen more of.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I had a fun one with ChatGPT. I was asking it just some questions to see how accurate it was. And I asked who founded the company Reflect Digital.
Sure.
And it gave my husband's name. He's not the founder. I founded
interesting.
It.
Interesting.
So I was like, no. No.
Change your system.
My please and thank yous are going right out the window here if you can't even get your information correct. But it's interesting that there's no tonality. Like if I said something to you that I wasn't quite sure about,
sure.
You probably might hear it in my voice.
Yeah,
the way I'd say it, I'd be like, oh, maybe this.
Yeah.
But because it's just written,
mm-hmm.
It all comes across in the same way, doesn't it? And it never doubts itself. It never says, well, I'm not quite sure, but I think this. It always says this.
And the thing is, it's also, it has tells in terms of what it writes. So for example, again, going back to my recruitment is the amount of cover letters that I see that I can tell are written by ChatGPT, because one, it uses certain vocabulary. It uses words like innovative or revolutionary a lot. And that's very obvious to tell. But then the key giveaway, and I'm gonna be quite blunt here and say you're a fool if you're not checking ChatGPT when you do writing, because it will do it all in American.
Yes,
which means that there's lots of Zs. And it can, like, if you're applying for a job and you do a cover letter that's written by ChatGPT and then you don't change those Zs to Ss, for someone in, like me in this role, who is very good at spotting that, you've just completely ruined your chances just because you didn't want to write it yourself. And I think that's such a missed opportunity.
Just a quick note from me. We'd love you to hit the subscribe button. This helps us more than you might realize when it comes to growing this podcast, ensuring we can bring you the best guests possible. Thank you. Back to the episode.
Do you know what? And I'll be interested in your views on this. So one of the things that I still don't know why it hasn't taken off is video cover letters. So like instead of doing a cover letter, recording a little 2-minute, 3 minutes saying, hi, I'm Becky. I'm really interested in joining your company because of X, Y, and Z. And this is what I like the sound of. This is what my real strengths are. Because I think for some people, they will find that really uncomfortable.
Hmm.
But for people that can, and maybe you'll do 20 edits before you get to the one you want to do.
Yeah.
But actually, to be able to bring yourself out of the screen and off of the page and to being a human, I just think it's a no-brainer.
I think that is amazing. I think that is such a good idea.
It is.
I think the reason why people don't do it more is because so much of applying to things is over email.
Yeah.
And there aren't, so video isn't natively integrated into emails. If there was a record button in Gmail, for example, you'd probably get that a lot more.
Yeah.
And, you know, Google, if you're listening, maybe that's something to add.
Yeah. Although it's our idea. You heard it here first. Come back.
Stop listening, Google. Yeah. So, I think that is such a good idea.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Because once you've seen 100 CVs, it makes it very difficult to give every one of them the attention it deserves.
Yeah.
Particularly when they all look the same. So doing a video is such a good way to stand out. And I think that's a really good point is with so much of this industry, it's about standing out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for example, I'll give you an example. I have two people coming in on Monday for a role. Now I won't be too specific. I'm not gonna dox anyone, but one of them made a real effort to tell me how much they really wanted to be a part of our team. And that in itself, just putting in that extra effort to really be enthusiastic about it, is such a powerful way to just get ahead of everyone else, to stand out.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people are worried about like putting all their eggs in one basket with these sorts of things. I find that there's a... when it comes to applying, there's almost, it's become what I'm going to call the Tinder effect, which is just swipe, 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 swipe. Because a lot of people, particularly now with things like LinkedIn's easy apply, they'll just do apply, 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 apply.
Which I wish they'd not done that, because you end up with people that are irrelevant. They haven't thought about it. They haven't put their best foot forward.
The amount of times I have my initial video interviews with people and I ask the question, so what do you know about Evergreen? And they say, to be honest, not a lot. Yeah. I think, you just have to look at the website.
Yeah, you could have asked ChatGPT and you would have got something.
Well, no, don't do that because it'll probably be wrong. Yeah, it is wrong a lot of the time.
It'll say Darren founded the agency. Yeah. You're like, I'll take it.
Okay, maybe I did.
No, it's funny, isn't it? Oh, I find it shocking the amount of applications we get without any covering note. They just send their CV, even though we put it as a thing. It's interesting why people wouldn't want to put that extra bit of effort.
I can see why people don't put in the effort, because it's hard in this day and age. You kind of have to apply to lots of things, and it's difficult to put in 100% when you're applying to 50 different roles, knowing that most of them you're not going to get because it's such a competitive market. But I think you've really got to persevere.
Yeah. Well, and I suppose you pick your ones to double down on.
Yeah.
And go, do you know what? I'm going to do 50, but five of them, I'm really going to go for them. And I'm going to work out what those five are. Mm. I think a good example of standing out actually is a wonderful team member in Reflect Digital called Ellen. And she came to us about 5 years ago now. And she wanted an internship. And at the time, our internship schemes were all done through the university. Mm-hmm. It was all kind of sewn up. So most people that reached out to us and said, could I have an internship? The answer was, I'm really sorry, we've already got this thing set up. But she came in just via our kind of inquiries inbox, and she had designed her portfolio in our brand colors. She'd explained what it was that she wanted to do. She had shown us the experience she had. And honestly, this like 10-page PDF, I've still got it now. Was just amazing. Mm-hmm. And it was unignorable. I was like, I don't care if we don't have an internship. We need to meet this girl. And then when we met her, she was as fabulous as we expected. And the rest is history. She came in for an internship and then we didn't let her go. We were like, you need to stay. We gave her a job and she's flourishing and she's amazing. She runs her own community actually for young people in marketing. So we'll link that in the show notes because she's fantastic. It's called the Yes Meetup. But that was all about, she stood out. If she'd just sent her CV and said, I want an internship, I would have been like, I'm sorry, same answer we'd had to give others because we had this scheme running. But we pushed ourselves out of what we were doing. We found a way to find the extra budget because it was paid for internship, because we believed in her, because she stood out. So
I have a very similar story, which I mentioned Archie before. He's currently my junior video content creator. And he joined Evergreen when we weren't even apply. We weren't even recruiting. What he did, and this is such an easy way to stand out. And I will say, actually, I did this when I applied for my role. I called up the agency.
Yes.
And Archie called up. There was no role. He just said, I've just finished my A-levels and I love what you do and I'd really like to work with you and in any sort of marketing role. So we got him in, we spoke to him. Turns out there was actually a role that we kind of needed that we just hadn't put out there yet. And we just loved his enthusiasm, his willingness to go above and beyond. And so we gave him the job right then and there. And then slowly over time, as the creative stuff was getting higher, more and more, there was more going on my plate, again, Archie would constantly step forward and say, oh, actually, I did a bit of photography in college or in school. And so I'd say, okay, come with me on this shoot, see if you can do a bit of photography for me. And it was him constantly just putting his sort of foot forward and sort of throwing his hat in the ring and say, and being willing to go above and beyond, that then when it came time to us needing another creative, it was sort of like, he's kind of been here the whole time. Yeah. And when I still remember when I offered him the job, he said he'd always wanted to do it. He just never thought he'd have the chance to have the skills to do it.
Wow.
And that goes back to what we were saying before about the cultural fit versus the skills fit, is that I knew that I could hire someone who probably had more skills in video editing than Archie, but I knew I could teach him that. And yeah. I loved working with him so much that I knew I would have a great time teaching him that stuff.
Yeah.
And I knew he was so proactive that he'd learn it really quickly, which of course he did.
Yeah.
Because he's now in charge of all of our content.
So. Love that. Well That's done, Archie.
Yeah.
So have you got any final questions to wrap us up?
Do you have any advice to students my age about for example, they're struggling on what they want to do, or they're unsure.
Yeah, I think I absolutely understand this because I was completely in the same boat. What I'll say to not do is what I did, which is just keep going down the wrong path because you're afraid to stop and do nothing. I think it's important to actually stop and think about what you want to do. I think we were talking before about the positive side of me going to university is that it allowed me to experience lots of things, and that in turn helped me figure out what I wanted to do. So I think you don't have to stop and then sit in your bedroom for a year. I think go out and do things and experience things and learn things. And I think being proactive and being able to say yes to things is great. But then at the same time, if you do something for a couple of weeks and you think this isn't for me, don't feel like you've got to keep doing it.
Mm.
Try lots of things, go to lots of places, meet lots of people, have conversations and learn about yourself. Because ultimately, if you don't know what you want to do, all that really means is you don't know yourself well enough.
Yeah.
And I think the best way to understand yourself, to learn who you are and who you want to be, is by just putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
So go to events, talk to people online who have similar interests.
Host a podcast.
There you go. You're doing it.
Go connect with people on LinkedIn. Yeah. Go get experience.
That's it.
Because I think until you try something, it always worries me when people go, oh, yeah, I'm going to uni to become a lawyer. And I'm like, oh, have you done any work experience in a law firm? Oh, no. Yeah, yeah. And you're like, oh, you probably because you might love it, but you also might not. And that could be 3 or 4 years of your life you can't get back, and a huge student debt in something that you didn't love.
Yeah.
So go try stuff. So
and also just know that it's never too late to start something new.
Yeah.
This is particularly the case with education. If you're doing a college course or a university course and you know you don't want to do it anymore, and you are absolutely sure, and you're giving it a lot of thought, because you do need to give these things a lot of thought. But if you are sure, then don't force yourself to keep going just for the sake of it, just to say you did it, because ultimately you're spending time doing something that you don't love.
Yeah.
And life's too short to definitely not do what you love.
What a wonderful note to end on. This has been absolutely amazing,
I
Erin. Thank you so much. You've shared such wonderful stories, which from the very start we knew that was what was coming, didn't we? And yes, Asha, you've been fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we look forward to seeing you all again on our next episode of Behind the Future.
Thanks a lot.
That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.